Chapter 23. Roxana commands, gratitude and treachery are merely the two extremities of the same procession. You have seen all of it that is worth staying for, when the band and the gaudy officials have gone by. Pudd'nhead Wilson's calendar, Thanksgiving Day. Let us all give humble, hearty, and sincere thanks now, but the turkeys. In the island of Fiji they do not use turkeys, they use plumbers. It does not become you and me to sneer at Fiji. Pudd'nhead Wilson's calendar, the Friday after the election was a rainy one in St. Louis. It rained all day long, and rained hard, apparently trying its best to wash that soot-blackened town white, but of course not succeeding. Toward midnight Tom Driscoll arrived at his lodgings from the theater in the heavy downpour, and closed his umbrella, and let himself in. But when he would have shut the door, he found that there was another person entering, doubtless another lodger. This person closed the door and tramped upstairs behind Tom. Tom found his door in the dark, and entered it, and turned up the gas. When he faced about, lightly whistling, he saw the back of a man. The man was closing and locking his door from him. His whistle faded out, and he felt uneasy. The man turned around, a wreck of shabby old clothes, sodden with rain and all a drip, and showed a black face under an old slouch hat. Tom was frightened. He tried to order the man out, but the words refused to come, and the other man got the start. He said, in a low voice, "Keep still, I's yo mother." Tom sunk in a heap on a chair, and gasped out, "It was mean of me, and base I know it, but I meant it for the best, I did indeed, I can swear it." Roxana stood a while looking mutely down on him, while he writhed in shame, and went on incoherently babbling self-accusations mixed with pitiful attempts at explanation and palliation of his crime. Then she seated herself, and took off her hat, and her unkempt masses of long brown hair tumbled down about her shoulders. "It warn't no fault o' yon that ain't gray," she said sadly, noticing the hair. "I know it, I know it. I'm a scoundrel. But I swear I meant it for the best. It was a mistake, of course, but I thought it was for the best, I truly did." Roxana began to cry softly, and presently words began to find their way out between her sobs. They were uttered lamentingly, rather than angrily. "Sell a pussin down the river, for the besses. I wouldn't treat a dog so. I is all broke down and then wore out now, and so I reckon it ain't in me to storm around no mo', like I used to when I us trampled on and bust. I don't know, but maybe it's so. Leastways, I suffered so much that mornin' seemed to come mo' handy to me now than stormin'." These words should have touched Tom Driscoll, but if they did, that effect was obliterated by a stronger one which removed the heavy weight of fear which lay upon him, and gave his crushed spirit a most grateful rebound, and filled all his small soul with a deep sense of relief. But he kept prudently still, and ventured no comment. There was a voiceless interval of some duration now, in which no sounds were heard, but the beating of the rain upon the panes, the sighing and complaining of the winds, and now and then a muffled sob from Roxana. The sobs became more and more infrequent, and at least ceased. Then the refugee began to talk again. "Shut down that light a little. More. More yet. A pussin that is hunted don't like the light. Da, that'll do. I can see why you is, and that's enough. I's gwine to tell you the tale, and cut it just as short as I can, and then I'll tell you what you's got to do. That man that bought me ain't a bad man. He's good enough, as planters goes. And if he could a had his way, I'd a been a house servant in his family and been comfortable. But his wife, she was a yank, and not right down good looking, and she riz up a gin me straight off. So then they sent me out to the quarter amongst the common field hands. That woman weren't satisfied even with that, but she worked up the overseer agin me, she was that jealous and hateful, so the overseer he had me out before day in the mornings and worked me the whole long as day is any light to see by, and many's the lashings I got cast I couldn't come up to the work o' the strongest. That overseer was a Yank too, out in New England, and anybody down south can tell you what that mean. They knows how to work a nigger to death, and they knows how to whale em till they backs is welted like a washboard. Long at first my master say the good word for me to the overseer, but that is bad for me. For the mischief find it out, and arter that I just catched it at every turn, they warn't no mercy for me no more. Tom's heart was fired with fury against the planter's wife, and he said to himself, but for that meddlesome fool, everything would have gone all right. He added a deep and bitter curse against her. The expression of this sentiment was fiercely written in his face, and stood thus revealed to Roxana by a white glare of lightning which turned the somber dusk of the room into dazzling day at that moment. She was pleased and grateful, for did not that expression show that her child was capable of grieving for his mother's wrongs, and a feeling resentment toward her persecutors? A thing which as he had been doubting. But her flash of happiness was only a flash, and went out again, and left her spirit dark. For she said to herself, he sold me down the river he can't feel for a body long. This'll pass and go. Then she took up her tale again. About 10 days ago I was saying to myself that I couldn't last as many more weeks I was so wore out with the awful work and the lashings, and so downhearted and misable. And I didn't care no more, knew their life weren't worth nothing to me, if I got to go on like that. Well, when a body is in a frame o' mind like that, what do a body care what a body do? They was a little sickly nigger wench about 10 year old lady that was good to me, and hadn't no mammy, po' thing, and I loved her and she loved me. And she come out while I was working and as he had a roasted tater, and tried to slip it to me robbing herself, you see. Cast she knowed the overseer didn't give me enough to eat and he catched her at it, and give her a lick across the back with his stick, which was as thick as a broom handle, and she dropped screaming on the ground, and squirming and wallering around in the dust like a spider that's got crippled. I couldn't stand it. All the hellfire that was ever in my heart flame up, and I snatched the stick out in his hand and laid him flat. He laid da moanin' and cussin', and all out of his head, you know, and the niggers us plumb scared to death. They gathered round him to help him, and I jumped on his hoss and took out for the river as tight as I could go. I knowed what they would do with me. Soon as he got well he would start in and work me to death, if master let him, and if they didn't do that, they'd sell me further down the river, and that's the same thing. So I load to drown myself and get out o' my troubles. It us getting towards dark. I us at the river in 2 minutes. Then I see a canoe, and I says they ain't no use to drown myself till I got to. So I ties the hoss in the edge o' the timber and shove out down the river, keeping in under the shelter o' the bluff bank and praying for the dark to shut down quick. I had a powerful good start. Cast a big house us 3 mile back from the river and on the work mules to ride da on, and on the niggers ride em, and they weren't gwine to hurry they'd give all the chance they could. Before a body could go to the house and back it would be long pa's dark, and they couldn't track the hoss and find out which way I went till mornin', and the niggers would tell em all the lies they could about it. Well, the dark come, and I went on the spinning down the river. I paddled on 2 hours, then I weren't worried no more, so I quit paddling and floated down the current, considering what I was going to do if I didn't have to drown myself. I made up some plans, and floated along, turning them over in my mind. Well, when it was a little past midnight, as I reckoned, and I had come 15 or 20 mile, I see the lights o' a steamboat laying at the bank, what they weren't no town and no woodyard, and pretty soon I catched the shape o' the chimney top sagging the stars, and then good gracious me, I most jumped out o' my skin for joy. It was the Grand Mogul I was chambermaid on her for 8 seasons in the Cincinnati and Orleans trade. I slid long pause, don't see nobody stirring, no hear em a hammering away in the engine room. Then I knowed what the matter was, some o' the machinery's broke. I got a show below the boat and turned the canoe loose, Then I goes long up, and they us just one plank out, and I step board the boat. It us powerful hot, deckens and roust about us sprawled around asleep on the forecastle. The second mate, Jim Bangs, he sat da on the bits with his head down, asleep, cast that's the way the second mate stand the captain's watch. And the lay watchman, Billy Hatch, he us a nodding on the companionway, and I know them all. N, Lan, but they did look good. I says to myself, I wished old Marster had come along now and try to take me bless yo heart, I's mong friends, I is. So I tromped right along amongst them, and went up on the biller deck and way back aft to the ladies' cabin guard, and sat down dying the same cheer that I'd sat in Mose 100 million times, I reckon, and it us just home agin, I tell you. In about an hour I heard the ready bell jingle, and then the racket begin. Pretty soon I hear the gong strike. Set her back on the outside, apostrophe I says to myself. I reckon I knows that music. Apostrophe I hear the gong agin. Come ahead on the inside, apostrophe I says. Gong agin. Stop the outside. Apostrophe gong agin. Come ahead on the outside, now we's pinted for St. Louis, and I's outer the woods and ain't got to drown myself at all. Apostrophe apostrophe I knowed the mogul us in the St. Louis trade now, you see. It us just fair daylight, when we passed our plantation, and I see they gang o' niggers and white folks hunting up and down the show, and troubling theyselves a good deal about me, but I warn't troubling myself none about them. About that time Sally Jackson, that used to be my second chambermaid and us head chambermaid now, she come out on the guard, and us powerful glad to see me, and so us all the officers. And I told them, I'd got kidnapped and sold down the river, and they made me up $20 and give it to me, and Sally she rigged me out with good claws, and when I got here I went straight to why you used to was, and then I come to this house, and they say you's away, but expected back every day, so I didn't ask to go down the river to Dawson's, cause I might miss you. Well, losses Monday I us passin' by one o' them places in 4th Street wa de sticks up runaway nigger bills, and heps to catch 'em, and I seed my marster. I mose flopped down on the ground, I felt so gone. He had his back to me, and us talkin' to the man and givin' him some bills, nigger bills, I reckon, and I's the nigger. He's offerin' a reward, that's it. Ain't I right, don't you reckon? Tom had been gradually sinking into a state of ghastly terror, and he said to himself, now, I'm lost, no matter what turn things take. This man has said to me that he thinks there was something suspicious about that sale. He said he had a letter from a passenger on the Grand Mogul saying that Roxy came here on that boat, and that everybody on board knew all about the case. So he says, that her coming here instead of flying to a free state looks bad for me, and that if I don't find her for him, and that pretty soon, he will make trouble for me. I never believed that story. I couldn't believe she would be so dead to all motherly instincts, as to come here, knowing the risk she would run of getting me into irremediable trouble. And after all, here she is. And I stupidly swore I would help find her, thinking it was a perfectly safe thing to promise. If I venture to deliver her up, she, but how can I help myself? I've got to do that or pay the money, and where's the money to come from? Well, I should think that, if he would swear to treat her kindly hereafter and she says, herself, that he is a good man and if he would swear to never allow her to be overworked, or ill-fed, or, a flash of lightning exposed Tom's pallid face, drawn and rigid with these worrying thoughts. Roxana spoke up sharply now, and there was apprehension in her voice. Turn up that light. I want to see your face better. Done now lem look at you. Chambers, you's as white as your shirt. Has you see that man? Has he been to see you? Yes. When? Monday noon. Monday noon. Was he on my track? He thought he was. That is, he hoped he was. This is the bill you saw. He took it out of his pocket. Read it to me. She was panting with excitement, and there was a dusky glow in her eyes that Tom could not translate with certainty, but there seemed to be something threatening about it. The handbill had the usual rude woodcut of a turbaned Negro woman running, with the customary bundle on a stick over her shoulder, and the heading in bold type, $100 reward. Tom read the bill aloud, at least the part that described Roxana, and named the master and his St. Louis address, and the address of the 4th Street Agency, but he left out the item that applicants for the reward might also apply to Mr. Thomas Driscoll. Give the bill. Tom unfolded it and was putting it in his pocket. He felt a chilly streak creeping down his back, but said as carelessly as he could, "The bill? Why, it isn't any use to you, you can't read it. What do you want with it?" "Give the bill." Tom gave it to her, but with a reluctance which he could not entirely disguise. "Did you read it all to me?"
"Certainly I did."
"Hole up yo hand and swat to it." Tom did it. Roxana put the bill carefully away in her pocket, with her eyes fixed upon Tom's face all the while. Then she said, "Yo's lying. What would I want to lie about it for? I don't know, but you is. That's my opinion, anyways. But nemmen about that. When I see that man I us that scared that I could scarcely wobble home. Then I give a nigger man a dollar for these claws, and I ain't been in a house since, night nor day, till now. I blacked my face and laid hid in the cellar of a ole house that's burnt down, daytimes, and robbed the sugar hogsheads and grain sacks on the wharf, nights, to get something to eat, and never dast to try to buy nothing, and I's most starved. And I never dast to come near this place till this rainy night, when they ain't no people round scarcely. But tonight I been a-standin' in the dark alley ever since night come, waitin' for you to go by. And here I is." She fell to thinking. Presently she said, "Gutenberg edition. End of chapter."